Welcome back, everybody. It's your time to ed up on the Ed Up Experience podcast, where we make education your business. This is Dr. Joe Sallustio back with you on another episode. A little under the weather today. Excuse me, my six-year-old had to come in and sleep with me because he wasn't feeling good. He had a fever and coughed all over me last night, and I mean all over me. So I woke up today with a little bit of the sniffles, but no rest for the weary, as they say. We have students to serve, and we got to get in here and serve them. I want to remind everybody very, very soon, if you listen to this episode, it'll come out pretty quick, but we're going to be at Eleusinian E Live in San Antonio, Texas, recording live. Elvin and I will have 8 live hot mics to capture as many conversations as possible at Eleusinian as we talk with leaders there. There's a solar eclipse coming up, so we'll get to see the eclipse. And lots going on in and around higher education as we bring leaders back to this microphone, tell you what those things are. And we've got a returning guest today. And before I introduce her, I want to introduce my guest co-host. I think this is the second time he's guest co-hosted, but I cannot remember, but he has been a guest before. And then I had a couple cocktails with him last time we saw each other in person, so I'm actually a little fuzzy on how many times he's been on the podcast before. Ladies and gentlemen, he's the president of the Rocky Mountain College of Art and Design. He is Mr. Brent Fitch. Brent, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, Joe. I'm doing great. No, this is first time co-hosting.
Yeah, I've
been on the episode a few times. And then, yes, we, although I had a few cocktails, we would like to think about what happens at a conference, because at a conference, but...
Yes. But you know what? Except for the evening time when, you know, we can catch up on what's happening in higher education over an adult beverage. There's nothing wrong with that. We're adults.
That's where you learn actually the most.
Right? Yeah, you do. Exactly. We had pretty good conversation, didn't we?
We did.
Brent, where are you and what's happening with the weather where you are right now?
Yeah, I'm in Denver. Woke up this morning. It's about 6 inches on the car, so I had to be pulling that off. And kind of you're looking outside, the campus is just winter wonderland right now. Just nothing but snow all over the place. And our fantastic crew has gotten really prepared for classes today.
Well, all it takes is a little bit of sunshine to clear off the snow, and we've brought you all here at the Ed Up Experience a ray of sunshine. AKA my guest today. She's like a ray of educational knowledge and sunshine. You've heard her before. She's big. I told her, I said, you're big time. You know that, right? And she goes, no. I was like, no, you are. You're big time. Ladies and gentlemen, back again, now a year into her role. Here she is. She is the Chief Content Officer at Coursera. She is Dr. MBS Marnie Baker-Stein. What's going on? Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. I'm also clearing out the snow this morning in my own winter wonderland in Park City, and I'm super happy to be here.
Are you super happy about the snow, or you're super happy to be at the Ed Up Experience?
To be here and get me through this late spring, early spring snow, because it's rough. After 5 or 6 months in a row of snow, we're ready for spring. So
you thought you were out of it, but alas, one more last positive snowfall, right?
Hopefully, yes.
Well, Marnie, last time we spoke with you as a guest, and people will know that listen to the experience, you guest co-hosted with me. So I had to remember exactly how long it had been since we had you on as a guest, and a very important guest because you're doing very important work at Coursera. You were 1 month into your role. And what surprised me about that episode is I went back and listened to it, how much was hitting you. I was asking you questions about classes and content, and you're just going thousands and hundreds of thousands. How do you get your arms around that? So here we are a year later. Can you talk about what the journey has been like for you at Coursera to get your legs under you?
Sure. So I would add to sort of just the enormity and the global scale of Coursera. I joined right about the exact same time that Gen AI hit in a very big way, not only in the US, but everywhere. And in 2023 and into these first months of 2024, had a sort of front row seat as a witness to sort of the most rapid evolution of the job market that I've ever seen. you know, we're in the midst of this revolution where AI and machine learning are not just skills, but superpowers. And Coursera is right in the middle of that revolution as the place where people are coming to keep up and to skill, upskill, reskill, whatever skill, their way into both opportunity, but also into a place where they're going to, where their futures are secure.
With that, that's one part of the job, right? You've got a consumer. That consumer wants more skills. Coursera is going to be there, but you also had this internal infrastructure you have to navigate. The courses, the people, the employees that you have, the development, the marriage of relevant skills to the course, right? Because that can go away really fast if you're not updating all the materials. Talk a little bit about the internal. Give us some inside baseball on what it's like to keep this stuff going.
Sure. I've said this multiple times recently. In 2023, we had one student every minute enrolling in this new Gen AI and other fresh tech content. In 2024, that's quadruple. That's four people every minute.
Surprise!
Demanding this content. And it's people from across the spectrum, from cybersecurity specialists to front-end developers to folks who are teachers or nurses who are really looking to understand how this content is going to impact their futures in positive ways, as well as in ways that they need to be aware of so that they can begin to build their career around where we're going. So that demand, that enormous demand is something that we have to keep up with, as well as the fact that this technology, these capabilities are moving faster than any we've ever seen before. So that combination of this massive, diverse demand with the fact that this area of content, these technologies, these tool sets, these capabilities around very specific tasks from cybersecurity to nursing, that's a lot for a content engine to keep up with. So we've had to supercharge our focus in these areas, both in terms of keeping up with all the research on how Gen AI is impacting jobs. So for example, we've learned that almost 50% of job tasks across domains, across disciplines, across sectors are being sort of radically impacted by these new technologies. We've had to really almost adjust the way that we think about job roles and tasks in an era where those roles and tasks are evolving so quickly. And we've had to start working with all of our partners, from university partners to industry partners, differently in the types of content we're looking for, the formats of content we're looking for, toward a more agile system so that we're able to keep up, and not just once, but continuously as this whole world unfolds.
Four people a minute. Is that what I heard you say? Four Yes. people enrolling in that a minute. So that's like eight people in 2 minutes, just for anybody that's... I mean... It's pretty amazing when you start doing the math on it, but it is, right? Four people a minute, and you start to think about that demand, that scale, and it's monstrous. It's unbelievable. Brent, kick it over to you, man.
Yeah, it's amazing, Marty. And as a college president, you know, we are just trying to understand how we incorporate Gen AI and other groundbreaking technologies into our courses, and then figure out if the reprograms could, along with Gen AI, whether it's the technical part of it or the user experience, and what does that look like? I was talking to somebody last week about, you know, what's going to happen with the regulations and laws that are going to come out of that. So, you know, getting back to, you know, helping, because we work with a ton of institutions. What does it look like for a college president to say, partner with Coursera, or, you know, or try to at least try to understand what does the connections look like, and how can we use that to serve more students in the class, as well as, you know, think of using the classroom as a vehicle with Gen AI?
Yeah, thank you. That's a Great question. It's just another thing for a college president in today's world of being a college president to keep up with.
One more thing.
Just one more little thing on top of all the other things. I think, like, just generally, I think it's important that everybody understands that the rise of generative AI and LLMs as the fastest growing skill set of 2024, maybe ever. It's not just about technology. It's not just about technology's advancement. It's a clear signal for the future of teaching and healthcare and communication and creativity and problem solving. So it's got very, very interdisciplinary, transdisciplinary use cases that are important for us to all be incredibly intentional about as we're building them into these sort of pathways of knowledge and skills and ability development for learners who are going to have to go out and get jobs in a job market that's really radically transformed. And in fact, I think there's been a 20-fold increase just in the U.S. of job postings that require these skills, and it really is across all kinds of roles, not just tech roles. So I think that's the first thing. This is a very interdisciplinary tool with applications way beyond just tech, and that could, if we're intentional about it, have really positive impacts on our pedagogies and our ability to get students to think and be creative in their uses of these tools. So that's a really overarching statement. At Coursera, we know through some of our programs, we have a program called Coursera for Campus, where we work with universities all over the globe, thousands of universities all over the globe, to think about how they can intentionally build some of this Gen AI content and other types of content, data, cybersecurity, et cetera. But let's call it fresh tech content. It's very difficult for a university or an institution, for most universities and institutions to keep up with, to be able to build that Coursera content into their curricula. So we have Coursera for Campus. It allows an institution to look at all this amazing content from deep learning, from Google, from Unilever, from Meta, to look at that content and figure out how, as we're keeping it fresh on the Coursera side, that an institution can incorporate it inside of courses or inside of degree pathways that they're offering on campus. And that's been a really great, I think, input to solving this problem with universities kind of everywhere.
Amazing.
It was a follow-up, if I may. So, you know, as you look at, I think your two offerings, Career Academy and Full Catalog. So if an institution uses the Full Catalog, then do you work with them all the way down to the course level and incorporating it into the learning objectives in the LMS? Or how do you play in that space?
So we have, as we're working with universities, we have conversations about their use cases and make recommendations on how a university can incorporate this type of content into a course at a course level or into a curriculum if they're sort of embedding a certificate, for example, from Meta inside of their curricular pathways. We have a new tool that is actually Gen AI powered called Course Builder that is essentially an LLM-driven course authoring tool that allows faculty to curate targeted Coursera content against their learning objectives, and also helps them to think through what the appropriate objective aligned assessments are around that content as well. So a faculty member could kind of create a course that was components of their own content and as well as components of Coursera content inside the same course. And that tool, Course Builder, is great because it almost provides just-in-time assistance to faculty using it to figure out how best to use Coursera content in their particular instructional context. So we're super excited about Course Builder because we think it makes our catalog much more accessible to any faculty who's interested, regardless of whether they're teaching a design class or a data analysis class.
Marnie, one of the interesting things that you said, and you know, this, I think it's a lesser talked about part of what Coursera can do for schools. You know, we typically, and you know this, in higher ed, we create a program and we're going to take that program and we're going to go start marketing because we think there's some validation out there that says we can get students in this program. Yeah. Then you look at something like Coursera where you've got short courses, skill building, and the student selecting these courses is almost determining what a degree should look like if they take those skills and they wanted to elevate those skills. It's a reversal of, hey, we're going to build this degree and see what happens in the market, to here's what the market's already saying. Can you build something to match the speed of the market? Can you just talk about that and how you discuss with university partners? Because I think there's still a traditionalism set within higher education. Many of us experience that of, well, we're going to build this program the way we think it should be built. We're going to go out to market in hopes students choose it. Well, the consumer has much more bang than they used to now because they don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, we had over 4 million enrollments in entry-level certifications with job-aligned skills in 2023. And that was a 25% year-over-year increase. And we're seeing that marketplace for what we all call micro-credentials that are skills-aligned, just growing. Why? Because there's a clear value proposition for learners against how these skills align with jobs that they can get in the places where they live or where they want to live. But also, they're short and they're agile in that way, that a learner can come in, gain a set of skills, and then use those skills to sort of build their brand and their profile in the economic reality that we all live in everywhere, whether that's in the US or whether that's in India or Mexico or Europe. So we're seeing massive demand for micro-credentials, and we're also seeing, which I think is really interesting, really creative ideas coming out of university partners for how those credentials can be integrated into that degree pathway, whether it's as an on-ramp into a degree and with performance-based assessment capabilities or prior learning credit, or whether they're actually components of the degrees, so that a learner will graduate with a degree in political science or fine arts, but also have a professional certificate associated with that degree credential in UX design or in data analytics. And I love seeing that happen. Of course, in my own past, that's something that I've seen work really well at scale. And it allows a learner to sort of develop this holistic profile by studying the things that they love, as well as adding on sort of these professional credentials to help them get a better job, hopefully. So that's kind of what we're seeing out there. And I think it's really exciting because if I am a person, an adult working professional who just needs skills to get promoted in my job pathway, awesome. Micro-credentials are great for that. But if I'm at the beginning of my career, these same micro-credentials can help me add on to a degree program that we know is so critical for career starters in ways that can really, really add value.
Brent, I'm going to pass it back to you, but just one quick follow-up, because I'm going to ask you to get real with us, Marnie. As you talk to university partners, is there still an adoption cycle spectrum that we're going through? You know, where maybe university comes to you and says, oh yeah, we'd love to take these Coursera micro-credentials and work them into our courses. And then you actually try to go and do that within the institution, and the institution is elastic and snaps back, and there's committees and this, that's, and all of a sudden, you know what? We didn't get to where we thought we were going to go because this inertia takes place. There is still some of that out there, or do you think that we're getting over ourselves to some degree?
So there's, of course, some of that out there, right? Because university curricula is generally designed to move pretty slowly, and there are operating constraints around it and kind of governance constraints around it that that faculty, like innovative faculty, have to go through if they want to do something radical with their curriculum pathways. So, you know, that's still the case, of course, and that's the case everywhere around the world. But I would say in the last 2 years, there's a lot less friction on that front and a lot more momentum around doing some innovative things that align more traditional degree pathways with some of these skills-based credentials and achievements. That's true in the U.S. And that's also true in India. We've been seeing in our work with some of the top institutions in India, some of the most creative use cases of bringing together sort of industry-aligned skills-based curricula with critical degree pathways that align with their sort of workforce needs in India. So it's kind of a global phenomenon we're seeing. We're trying to really help by working with ACE or ACE in the US, as well as ECTS in Europe and other sort of credit recognition agencies around the world, to make it as easy as possible for faculty to make the case that these are valid, rigorous educational programs that are worthy of being built into degrees.
Thank you. Brent.
Now, right, yeah, pretty interesting the way the website kind of focuses on the different users. So obviously we talked about universities and how they can partner with you. Two other areas, you offer degrees directly from your site, and another section for employers. Can you talk about those two other areas, first degrees, and then how you work with employers to help them, that SAQ, describe it as you're trying to solve the access and equity equation for education, and your role of that's a pretty big task, but if anyone could do, you could. So chase out how it all works.
No pressure.
I think that the most exciting idea on the degree front at Coursera is we really want to create an environment in most cases with our degrees where learners can almost start anytime in our open content, or what many people call MOOCs. So in our open content for free or very low cost, exploring pathways into degrees, figuring out if they like it, figure out if they're good at it, figure out if they've got like the passion that's going to take to move that forward. And then working with our degree partners as much as possible to create pathways from that open content into their degree program through prior learning credit or progress recognition, also progressing open content, or even performance-based admissions in some cases. So that's kind of where we're heading on that front. And that's exciting to us because that is an opportunity machine for learners everywhere at scale to get started in building the skills they need in these particular high impact areas, whether it's cyber or UX design or generative AI or whatever it is, and then find their way into the degree credentials they need to actually be competitive. That's what's up on the degree front with us. And and I love that work. And outside of the degrees focus at Coursera, we have three verticals, we call them, inside of Enterprise. One we've already talked about, which is Coursera for Campus. So it's how we sort of deliver our catalog and tools like Course Builder to university partners who can then build our content into their curricular pathways. Our biggest C4C customer of late, who has one of the biggest sort of micro-credential initiatives in the country and in the world, is the University of Texas system, where they're offering micro-credentials as part of Career Academy to over 250,000 learners and doing some really innovative work on that front. We also have C4B, so that's our work that we're doing with employers. And that work really focuses on working with like employers and their chief learning officers or their learning departments to curate Coursera content with similar tooling as we use for C4C to their specific business needs, given the industry that they're in and the types of roles that they're trying to impact. And we also have Coursera for Government, where we're working with government agencies like big departments of labor or workforce commissions all over the U.S., notably in New York and Louisiana, Nevada, but also all over the world, like in Kazakhstan and Greece, and you know, just working on the problems that governments are facing in their countries with building out the kind of educational infrastructure that they need to keep their talent pipelines flowing.
Amazing. And if you've been listening recently to the podcast, Marnie, which I know you have because you never miss an episode, of course, we have started something called the EdUp Either Or Experience. And this is where, let me play the music. This is where, can you hear the music? Is it light? Is it too light? Let me turn it up. Uh-oh, there we go. It should get your anxiety levels. What's that?
That was a good effect.
You like
erased the thought process up.
Yes. We're gonna get you thinking. I'm gonna ask you either or. I'm gonna give you a word and a different word, and you've got to pick which one resonates more with you. You can of course add anything into it that you want. These are higher ed terms or business leadership terms, just to get an idea of how you will think about your day, about our semantics that we use in higher ed. And if you say both or neither, you owe me $5 for that question. I will collect later. Brent already owes me a cocktail, so just add it to the tab, Brent. And Marnie, we're going to start with you. And here we go. SIS or LMS?
SIS.
Brent, SIS or LMS?
LMS.
Okay. Marnie, paradigm shift or pivot?
Pivot.
Brent.
I agree entirely.
Okay. Marnie, the student's a consumer or something else?
The student is a consumer.
Like everything we should be doing in higher education, the student centered on value for that consumer.
Yes. I think the student's consumer information, one part, and then zero consumer because they're a trio as a customer outside of the classroom.
Power skills or durable skills?
Power skills.
Brent.
I agree. Power skills.
This is where it gets really fun. This is where you start getting neither or both. Unpack, Marnie, unpack or deep dive?
Unpack.
Brent.
Yeah. I want to put up on the another sentence on this one, but I'm not going to owe you fast loss. I'll do it deep dive.
See how it makes you choose an answer? Because you know I'm going to see you and be like, hey, where's my...
I know you will be like...
Yeah. I'm Italian. I will come get my money. We'll do a couple more of these. Marnie, lifelong learner or pre-K to Gray?
Pre-K to Gray.
Brent.
Yeah, 3K to Gray. That's a better example, but I like that.
Marnie, unlearn or relearn?
I'm going to use drink to me. Two souls.
Yes. First, hello.
Yeah, I'll go with the third option, always learning.
Okay, so that's another $5 then. All right, this is where it gets fun.
Leaving with some debt.
That's right. That to an Italian. Bad move. Marnie, table that or circle back?
Thanks.
I'll go with circle back.
Brent?
Circle back.
Okay, we'll do two more. Marnie, culture or strategy?
Culture.
Brent?
Culture.
Okay, last one. Last one. Marnie already said it once today. Pedagogy or pedagogy? Marnie.
It depends. It depends on the day for me.
$10 for Marnie. $10. Pedagogy or pedagogy, Brent?
Tomatoes, mile. I mean, what are we?
Looks like I'm coming out the big winner on this episode of the EdUp Either Or Experience. Thank you guys for playing. Did the music stop? Just a little bit of fun in the episode here as we get to learn a little bit about each other, and I get to have people across higher education owe me money, which is one of my long-term goals, to start calling in favors to these people. So I'm setting everybody up. Hey, Brett, remember that one time, that $15, right? We try to have fun here. And you know what? Pre-K to Gray was something that came across of last year. I can't remember who said it, but it was like lifelong learning or pre-K to Gray. These are the terms that we use to describe learners in multiple different ways. So I thought, let's bring all that terminology in into a little fun experience with it. And Brent, I'm going to pass it back to you to ask Marnie any final questions you have before we close out the episode.
Yeah, this is more on just leadership. I know you've had to read the roles, Marnie. So for for, I guess, tips of the trade. If you think about your inside circle and you have those 3 AM conversations with yourself, when you actually get in the bed and have access to everyone, what does that circle look like? And how do you share your thoughts and ideas to get work done and make a difference, considering, you know, the large scale you manage?
So, I think that one of the big learnings that started when I was at Western Governors University and definitely has accelerated in my new role is that in the kind of role I have now, you have to be able to balance long-term thinking and investments with sort of short-term requirements where you have more control in the long-term and less control in the short-term. And like getting to balance it, particularly in a year like the one we've been having, where we've had to put so much focus on Gen AI and these new types of content that are moving so fast. But we also, as I mentioned before, have some really systemic sort of repositioning projects going on with degrees and with workforce and talent pipeline. So sort of figuring out how with my inner circle or my leadership circle to keep those things balanced and on track so that one doesn't upset the other is really, really critical. And then the other thing I've learned is that like my job is to then create the safe creative space for really talented, smart, amazingly passionate people to figure out how to keep that balance together as a team.
When you say balance, real quick, is it easy to get lost down the Gen AI pathways because it's demanding so much attention that you could lose sight of these other really important skills that aren't in as high demand but people still really need?
I think that's just one example, but there are always things that have to be that are on the front burner in. Then boiling over that you have to attend to. And you can really plan for those things. I mean, sometimes you can, but a lot of times these are just things that happen. And so focus goes on those things. And you have to, though, as you are adjusting your focus to take care of business in the present, you absolutely have to not lose sight of where you're going. And I think that is an age-old challenge of leadership. But it gets harder and harder, it seems, every year that goes by as the world is moving so quickly, the structure of work is moving so quickly, the technologies that allow us to sort of understand what's possible in learning spaces are moving so quickly that you can very easily get caught up in that and lose sight of where we're going for learners and what needs to happen for learners in the future to make sure that they are they have equitable access to opportunity everywhere.
Go ahead, Brandon. I think I cut you off last time.
No, that's okay, Joe. You spend a year kind of doing that, taking over.
Okay.
He's not like you know to talk about select comment, but that's okay. Who's keeping track? Well, thanks for that. That's very insightful. And I think you said it best when you were doing either or discussion or culture. Right. You have to have the right culture in order to draft strategy. And I think we all agree. And what you just explained was a great example of making sure you set the right culture, the right tone, the accountability, trust, constant play as you manage a pretty big long-term and short-term deliverables are according to strategy.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Marnie, tell us what else you want to say about Coursera. And I'm going to put one quick question there and you can take it how you want. I'm also wondering what you, because you made a big move. You were in higher ed for a long time. And so this move to Coursera that's higher ed adjacent, what do you miss about the higher ed institutional environment? What do you feel like you could leave behind? You know, let's not call it leaving it high, but what things don't you miss as much? But you still miss them, but you don't miss them as much. And anything else you want to add about Coursera?
Yeah. So I would say that when you move away from a campus, whether that campus is on ground or a big online institution, you're moving steps away from the learners themselves. You know, and I've felt that throughout my career. I used to be on a physical campus. I'd see learners walking by and, you know, I'd talk to them in the halls. And then I moved to online education where you're one more step away. You're still connected with them. You still have commencement ceremonies, et cetera, but the smaller step away, this is just one step further. And so I try to do my best at Coursera to connect with learners and learner stories as much as I can. We certainly have, you know, over 140 learners and they're amazing.
Just pick one. Yeah.
In every corner of the globe. And I think that's the bridge to what I don't miss. To be able to work on educational equity and access problems and challenges and opportunities at the scale of the world and be learning about not only what's happening in the U.S., in Texas, in Illinois, in Florida, but also what's happening in southern India versus northern India versus the U.K. versus Germany versus Mexico. You know, it's that perspective is so powerful for me, because I have learned that the themes and the problems to be solved and the moral imperatives that we have to sort of address are so unified everywhere. I mean, there are differences, but the similarities are much, much more powerful than I think I even suspected when I started. And I think that's the cool thing about Coursera that we kind of touched on, but in the kinds of offerings and pathways we have, whether it's clips or courses or micro-credentials or pathway degrees, like we are really driving equity at scale. We have, like, in our certificate programs alone, almost 40% of the enrollments in those certificates, for example, are women in job and career pathways that have a very, very low percentage of women today. So, and, you know, in terms of the Google certificates that we offer, some 55% of the completers are, you know, low-income learners or learners of color who are making under $30,000 a year in the U.S. I mean, these are huge impacts that we're having at a very accessible price point for learners with some of the best content in the world. And that is something that I don't know when people think of Coursera, I think they think that, but the actual reality of the impact it's having on learners is extraordinary.
What do you see for the future of higher education money or post-secondary education?
I think that higher education is already starting to grapple with the fact that the new traditional learner population they're serving is a lifetime learner population. And I think the educational system in the U.S. is going to have to start thinking about lifetime learning, not just as when you're 18 and on up, but with a K to gray lens, as you were saying, because the whole system needs to be repointed to address what learners are going to need into the future. And that's not only in the U.S., that's everywhere. I think the U.S. really needs to start, like, raising its gaze and looking at what's going on in some other parts of the world, because there are really innovative strategies on this front in countries like India and countries like Mexico, where just really amazing thinking is going on around what the future of education is going to require. So I'm hopeful that we'll be more global minded in the future as well.
You know, one thing I noticed, Brent, I don't know if you noticed it or not, that I'm going to go back and when I transcribe this episode, I'm pretty sure that Marnie didn't say student one time. She said learner every time, but never said student. I don't know if that's intentional, Marnie, or not. I'm assuming it is. I bet it took a lot of brain training.
Actually, it is. Well, I guess it's just true. In many, many hundred, well over 100 million learners on Coursera, they aren't necessarily students in institutions, but they are learners. And so, yeah, I guess there has been a lot of brain training over the last year.
Student comes very natural to us, doesn't it? In higher ed, to say the student's a student's a student, but the student's evolving. Brent, you know about that. And how was your first co-hosting gig here on EdUp?
Oh, it was fantastic. I learned so much, and it was such a pleasure, Marnie, just to listen to you and to learn what Brasier is doing. And I think it's just a host of information for learners and people who influence learners, from corporations to institutions. And we had talked about it, I think, all the way down the chain to first rate. What concept can we find for kids where we can help them be better and provide them access, as you so eloquently described, people that don't really get access from having the ability to do that. I think as administrators, it's our role to make sure that we understand that and have a partner like Brasier who we can, rely on for information and kind of distribute that information to our learners. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thanks for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, first, he's Mr. Brent Fitch. He is the guest co-host and the president of Rocky Mountain College of Art and Design. Brent, thanks for coming on, my friend. And I think we got another one or two coming up together in the near future. And of course, she's my third time guest, two-time co-host, and probably will be back again in one of those capacities, ladies and gentlemen. She's Doctor Marnie. That's what happens when you're under the weather. Sometimes your brain isn't working all the way. Hope you forgive me, Marnie. But thanks for coming back on, and we hope you had fun.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, and I hope you feel better.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just ed upped.